Hi, this is Bob Familiar for ArcCast. I'm here at TechEd North America with Jeremy Carrier. Now, Jeremy is the chief architect at Vistaprint. They are a provider of marketing services for small business. Jeremy is also responsible for technology strategy for enterprise architecture, and he leads a team that develops the foundation services for the Vistaprint developer organization. Welcome, Jeremy.
Thanks, Bob.
Now, you're here at TechEd. You're talking about quality in architecture, mm-hmm. and you posit that the quality of software solutions manifests itself in the architecture. Explain that.
Absolutely. So, first of all, architectural quality is the definition of goodness, and that isn't a universal thing. We can't say that every system has the same definition of quality. We don't want the same thing. Our stakeholders don't want the same thing from every system. So the first thing we need to do is appreciate that variability in quality. Some systems need to be maintainable primarily or focused on maintainability. Some need to have a predominance of performance, scalability. We need to appreciate that diversity and understand how to recognize that variation. The way that we manifest those quality properties is in the earliest decisions that we make in building software systems, the way we select platforms, the way we decompose functionality, the way we choose mechanisms for distribution, the way we choose communication mechanisms. And those are generally the most fundamental, most difficult to change, riskiest, most complex decisions, and the ones that we generally will characterize as architectural that happen earliest in the life cycle. So that's where quality comes from.
Okay, so then those architectural decisions, you're saying, are driving the quality.
Absolutely.
So how do those decisions get made today?
So that's kind of the ironic thing. As important and fundamental as these decisions are, they're generally made in a very non-repeatable fashion, let's say. So typically, you get the folks in a room that care about the decision, and you'll get some mostly technical people, and you kind of forget to bring in the people that care about what's going to happen when you make the decision. You forget about the business and operations and QA and the rest of the world, and you put the senior technical people in a room, and they fight it out. Right, whoever lasts longest, has the most energy that day, has the longest gray beard, yells loudest,
right,
gets their way. And sometimes that turns out to be the right thing. You get the right decision, and you end up with a system that does the right job, but it's not very repeatable, and it's also not very observable, not very visible. You can't go back in time and say, how did that argument transpire? Because there's nobody capable of tracking that kind of a decisioning process. And that leaves a big gap in our whole life cycle, because somebody's going to challenge you later. How did you make that decision? Maybe it's not your boss, but maybe it's your boss's successor. He's going to say, why did we go that way versus this way? And you're going to say, well, we just put some guys in a room and they fought it out. And
right.
It's not very satisfying.
Not at all. Now, you're proposing something called the Lightweight Architecture Alternative Assessment Method, or LAAAM, LAM,
yep.
As a better approach now to making those decisions. Can you explain that approach and what the benefits are?
Sure. So first off, I'll upfront recognize the weakness in the acronym, but we live with what we've got, and we're actually working on rebranding a little bit inside Vistaprint. But LAM is a method, first of all, that found its genesis when I was at Microsoft as an architect evangelist in financial services. It's evolved a fair amount since then at various places I've been since. But LAM is first and foremost driven by this definition of quality that I alluded to a minute ago. It strives as the first step before you think about technical solutions, about the decision-making alternatives themselves, strives first to figure out what goodness means, and involves the entire stakeholder community, the business, operations, QA, sort of anybody that cares about the success of a solution. And that might be a platform decision, it might be a detailed technical decision, kind of could be anywhere in that spectrum of granularity, but focuses first on, at the end of the day, when we look back, the systems fielded, the solutions fielded, we look back and we say, was that the right decision to make? How we're going to judge the state that we're in is the definition of quality. So LAM builds this thing called a quality tree, which is a hierarchical structure that organizes the quality properties of a system. So it starts with the ility, starts with scalability and maintainability and flexibility, and organizes those into a hierarchy, decomposes them, generally we just do two levels in this tree, but then ultimately into these things that we call scenarios that are very concrete manifestations of a definition of quality. We don't let you get away with saying, my system needs to be flexible and scalable and maintainable and secure and, you know, la 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 la, you make a list.
Right, right. Instead,
the method forces a concrete, measurable definition of, say, flexibility. So you would say, rather than saying I need to be flexible, you'd say, when we need to integrate a new third-party provider for payment authorization, it will take us no less than 1 week. That is a very concrete definition of a kind of flexibility that presumably is important to us as stakeholders in the system.
Right.
So it builds this thing called a quality tree. Then LAM lets you identify the alternatives. Doesn't really get very dogmatic about how you do that. You know, whatever your choices are that you're going to assess. And then LAM builds this thing called an assessment matrix, where you consider each pair of scenario and solution, and you judge it. You say, how well does this solution achieve this scenario? And you do that on a very coarse granularity. You just say, poor, fair, you know, good, excellent, you know, or good, very good, excellent.
And give it some kind of measure.
Just some kind of measure.
Right.
Very simple, very coarse-grained, but in my experience, completely adequate. So you go through this process, and you end up with an overall assessment of your alternative solutions that produces a score that then you can do some further kind of reasoning about sort of that the method guides you to dig deeper to understand what the results mean, but it gives you a directional indication of which solution is the right one to follow.
Okay. Now, that's great. So it's bringing discipline and process and strategic thinking to that process. Is it possible to over-engineer, though? Can you end up in analysis paralysis? How do you avoid that?
Yeah, it's certainly a risk, but one that, first off, I haven't seen manifest. I haven't, you know, in doing this in lots of different kinds of contexts, from selecting vendors for large-scale solutions to sort of very detailed design decisions, haven't really seen that happen. And maybe it's just because people get tired. You know, people sort of run out of steam on producing scenarios and going through alternatives. But the method kind of sort of self-shapes, because that quality tree has a fairly bounded scope. There are only so many quality properties at the high level to consider.
Right.
And sure, you could keep generating scenarios, but ultimately they lose importance. They're relatively unimportant compared to the ones that you identified earlier in the process. And that kind of provides a stable point in the execution of the method. So it's not a concern that I've really had to worry about too much.
All right. So it sounds like, and I love the fact that it's called lightweight, right? That kind of, if it were called the heavyweight,
right, you could
it would be ham rather than lamb, and then we'd be in
that'd
trouble.
Be bad.
No, keeping it lightweight appears to be the key here.
Yeah.
Now let's say you build up this database, all this information and these scenarios, and you've given some weighting to each of them. At some point, there has to be some decisions made, right? So how do you get the team to reach consensus?
Yeah, so that's one thing I didn't talk about is I sort of painted a picture that was sort of the utopian tree of goodness, right?
Yes.
And you can have everything that you want, and you build this tree that expresses all of your concerns, and then you pick the system that achieves that. But it turns out that there are always trade-offs.
Right.
And in fact, LAM was derived from a method at the SCI called ATAM, the Architecture Trade-off Analysis Method. And LAM borrows from it the notion that that these quality properties trade off against one another. You can't have all manners of flexibility and all manners of performance. They're generally in tension. So that recognition means that we need to prioritize. We need to somehow understand when the time comes to make a hard decision about which one we're going to optimize for, how we choose. And the way that LAM approaches that is it takes this hierarchical structure, this tree, and forces the stakeholders to rank at every node. So let's say at the top level of the tree, you have two things. You have performance and you have maintainability. The method forces you to choose which one of those is more important. You rank them, one, two. And then you drill down through the tree, ultimately ranking the scenarios. And what this produces via a number of different approaches that you can do mathematically is a weighting for each scenario, a hierarchical sort of computation of a relative weight for each scenario. And this is because we don't try to tackle the problem at its full scope and say, here's 50 scenarios. You stakeholders go and rank them or go in and weight them. Instead, we do it hierarchically. It makes the problem manageable. It allows us to ask very concrete questions of the people that that can answer them, right, and very quickly get to a specific assessment of relative importance. Sometimes it's hard, right? Sometimes you can't get a room of people to say which one's more important, performance or maintainability. And then you play some tricks, right? You can do voting. You can, you know, you can just say, everybody, give me your own answer, and you can do a little bit of math to come up with the one that's kind of going to best satisfy.
Right.
And again, I've done this in very complex stakeholder environments with people with extremely divergent, competing concerns. But you get to consensus, and not everybody gets everything they want. But that's the point.
And you avoid the shouting matches.
And you avoid the shouting matches,
which is very nice.
Right.
Well. I think it's great that you know you are doing this the research and applying these methodologies. You've got real world experience. You're here at TechEd. You're sharing it, which is fantastic, and you've shared it with us today. Where would one go to find out more about LAM if they wanted to try some of these techniques?
So I actually took my TechEd presentation and sort of linearized it into a blog, and that's published at my blog, which is called technogility.sjcarrier.com, which I'm sure we can find linked from the materials from this ARCcast.
Yep.
And it's kind of an exposition of the talk, which lays out the whole method in fairly good form.
Oh, great.
It needs to be written up in a little bit more formal fashion, but it's a start. And in fact, it closes with description of a tool that one of the guys that works for me, Gary Chamberlain, wrote. That makes the method very executable. Nice WPF-based tool that we're going to work towards understanding how to make more publicly available. So
that's fantastic. Yeah. I can't wait to take a look at it.
Well, I hope you like it.
Thanks, Jeremy.
Thanks, Bob.
Great job.
Thank you.